then place the large, depthless cobalt stone that graced the back of the gauntlet. A matching one lay atop his left hand, and twin red stones adorned Cassian's gauntlets, their color like the slumbering heart of a flame. I took Asriel's hand, and his rough fingers squeezed mine. His skin was as cold as his face. But the word Cassian had used a moment ago snagged my attention as I released his hand and tried not to look too eager to step back to Rhys's side. Your brothers? The Illyrians looked similar, but only in the way that people who had come from the same place did. Rhysand clarified, brothers, in the sense that all bastards are brothers of a sort. I'd never thought of it that way. And you? I asked Cassian. Cassian shrugged, wings tucking in tighter. I command Rhys's armies. As if such a position were something that one shrugged off. And armies. Rhys had armies. I shifted on my feet. Cassian's hazel eyes tracked the movement, his mouth twitching to the side. And I honestly thought he was about to give me his professional opinion on how doing so would make me unsteady against an opponent, when Asriel clarified, Cassian also excels at pissing everyone off, especially amongst our friends. So, as a friend of Rhysand, good luck. A friend of Rhysand, not savior of their land, not murderer, not human fairy thing. Maybe they didn't know. But Cassian nudged his bastard brother whatever out of the way, Asriel's mighty wings flaring slightly as he balanced himself. How the hell did you make that bone ladder in the Midengard worm's lair, when you look like your own bones can snap at any moment? Well, that settled that, and the question of whether he'd been under the mountain. But where he'd been instead? Another mystery. Perhaps here, with these people, safe and coddled. I met Cassian's gaze, if only because having Rhysand defend me might very well make me crumble a bit more. And maybe it made me as mean as an adder, maybe I relished being one, but I said, how the hell did you manage to survive this long without anyone killing you? Cassian tipped his head back and laughed, a full, rich sound that bounced off the ruddy stones of the house. Asriel's brows flicked up with approval as the shadows seemed to wrap tighter around him, as if he were the dark hive from which they flew and returned. I tried not to shudder and faced Rhys, hoping for an explanation about his spy master's dark gifts. Rhys's face was blank, but his eyes were wary, assessing. I almost demanded what the hell he was looking at, until Moore breezed onto the balcony with, If Cassian's howling, I hope it means Feyre told him to shut his fat mouth. Both Illyrians turned toward her, Cassian bracing his feet slightly farther apart on the floor in a fighting stance I knew all too well. It was almost enough to distract me from noticing Asriel as those shadows lightened and his gaze slid over Moore's body, a red flowing gown of chiffon accented with gold cuffs and combs fashioned like gilded leaves swept back the waves of her unbound hair. A wisp of shadow curled around Asriel's ear, and his eyes snapped to mine. I schooled my face into bland innocence. I don't know why I ever forget you two are related, Cassian told Moore, jerking his chin at Rhys, who rolled his eyes. You two and your clothes. Moore sketched a bow to Cassian. Indeed, I tried not to slump with relief at the sight of the fine clothes. At least I wouldn't look overdressed now. I wanted to impress Feyre. You could have at least bothered to comb your hair. Unlike some people, Cassian said, proving my suspicions correct about that fighting stance. I have better things to do with my time than sit in front of the mirror for hours. Yes, Moore said, tossing her long hair over a shoulder. Since swaggering around Valaris, we have company, was Asriel's soft warning, wings again spreading a bit as he herded them through the open balcony doors to the dining room. I could have sworn tendrils of darkness swirled in their wake. Moore patted Asriel on the shoulder as she dodged his outstretched wing. Relax, Az. No fighting tonight. We promised Rhys. The lurking shadows vanished entirely as Asriel's head dipped a bit, his night-dark hair sliding over his handsome face, as if to shield him from that mercilessly beautiful grin. Moore gave no indication that she noticed and curved her fingers toward me. Come sit with me while they drink. I had enough dignity remaining not to look to Reese for confirmation it was safe. So I obeyed, falling into step beside her as the two Illyrians drifted back to walk the few steps with their High Lord. Unless you'd rather drink, Moore offered as we entered the warmth and red stone of the dining room. But I want you to myself before Amryn hogs you. The interior dining room doors opened on a whispering wind, revealing the shadowed crimson halls of the mountain beyond. And maybe part of me remained mortal, because even though the short, delicate woman looked High Fae, as Reese had warned me, every instinct was roaring to run, to hide. She was several inches shorter than me, her chin-length black hair glossy and straight, her skin tan and smooth, and her face, pretty, bordering on plain, was bored, if not mildly irritated. But Amryn's eyes. Her silver eyes were unlike anything I'd ever seen, a glimpse into the creature that I knew in my bones wasn't High Fae, or hadn't been born that way. The silver in Amryn's eyes seemed to swirl like smoke under glass. She wore pants and a top like those I'd worn at the other mountain palace, both in shades of pewter and storm cloud, and pearls, white and gray and black, adorned her ears, fingers, and wrists. Even the High Lord at my side felt like a wisp of shadow compared to the power thrumming from her. Moore groaned, slumping into a chair near the end of the table, and poured herself a glass of wine. Cassian took a seat across from her, wiggling his fingers for the wine bottle. But Rhysand and Azriel just stood there, watching, maybe monitoring, as the female approached me, then halted 3 feet away. Your taste remains excellent, High Lord. Thank you. Her voice was soft, but honed sharper than any blade I'd encountered. Her slim, small fingers grazed a delicate silver and pearl brooch pinned above her right breast. So that's who he'd bought the jewelry for. The jewelry I was to never, under any circumstances, try to steal. I studied Reese and Amryn, as if I might be able to read what further bond lay between them. But Rhysand waved a hand and bowed his head.
It suits you, Amryn.
Everything suits me, she said, and those horrible, enchanting eyes again met my own, like leashed lightning. She took a step closer, sniffing delicately, and though I stood half a foot taller, I'd never felt meeker. But I held my chin up. I didn't know why, but I did. Amryn said, So, there are two of us now. My brows nudged toward each other. Amryn's lips were a slash of red. We, who were born something else, and found ourselves trapped in new, strange bodies. I decided I really didn't want to know what she'd been before. Amryn jerked her chin at me to sit in the empty chair beside Moore, her hair shifting like molten night. She claimed the seat across from me, Azriel on her other side as Reese took the one across from him, on my right. No one at the head of the table. Though there is a third, Amryn said, now looking at Rhysand. I don't think you've heard from Miriam in centuries. Interesting. Cassian rolled his eyes.
Please just get to the point, Amryn. I'm hungry.
Moore choked on her wine. Amryn slid her attention to the warrior to her right. Azriel, on her other side, monitored the two of them very, very carefully.
No one warming your bed right now, Cassian? It must be so hard to be an Illyrian, and have no thoughts in your head save for those about your favorite part.
You know I'm always happy to tangle in the sheets with you, Amryn,
Cassian said, utterly unfazed by the silver eyes, the power radiating from her every pore.
I know how much you enjoy Illyrian
Miriam,
Rhysand said, as Amryn's smile became serpentine.
And Drakon are doing well, as far as I've heard. And what exactly is interesting?
Amryn's head tilted to the side as she studied me. I tried not to shrink from it.
Only once before was a human made into an immortal. Interesting that it should happen again right as all the ancient players have returned. But Miriam was gifted long life, not a new body. And you, girl.
She sniffed again, and I'd never felt laid so bare. Surprise lit Amryn's eyes. Rhys just nodded, whatever that meant. I was tired already, tired of being assessed and evaluated.
Your very blood, your veins, your bones were made. A mortal soul in an immortal body.
I'm hungry, Moore said, nudging me with a thigh. She snapped a finger, and plates piled high with roast chicken, greens, and bread appeared. Simple, but elegant, not formal at all. Perhaps the sweater and pants wouldn't have been out of place for such a meal. Amryn and Rhys can talk all night and bore us to tears, so don't bother waiting for them to dig in. She picked up her fork, clicking her tongue. I asked Rhys if I could take you to dinner, just the two of us, and he said you wouldn't want to. But honestly, would you rather spend time with those two ancient boars, or me?
For someone who is the same age as me, Rhys drawled, you seem to forget.
Everyone wants to talk, Moore said, giving a warning glare at Cassian, who had indeed opened his mouth. Can't we eat, and then talk? An interesting balance between Rhys's terrifying second and his disarmingly chipper third. If Moore's rank was higher than that of the two warriors at this table, then there had to be some other reason beyond that irreverent charm. Some power to allow her to get into the fight with Amryn that Rhys had mentioned, and walk away from it. Asriel chuckled softly at Moore, but picked up his fork. I followed suit, waiting until he'd taken a bite before doing so. Just in case.
Good. So good. And the wine?
I hadn't even realized Moore had poured me a glass until I finished my first sip, and she clinked her own against mine. Don't let these old busybodies boss you around. Cassian said,
pot, kettle, black.
Then he frowned at Amryn, who had hardly touched her plate.
I always forget how bizarre that is.
He unceremoniously took her plate, dumping half the contents on his own before passing the rest to Asriel. Asriel said to Amryn as he slid the food onto his plate,
I keep telling him to ask before he does that.
Amryn flicked her fingers, and the empty plate vanished from Asriel's scarred hands.
If you haven't been able to train him after all these centuries, boy, I don't think you'll make any progress now.
She straightened the silverware on the vacant place setting before her.
You don't eat?
I said to her, the first words I'd spoken since sitting. Amryn's teeth were unnervingly white.
Not this sort of food.
Cauldron boil me, Moore said, gulping from her wine. Can we not? I decided I didn't want to know what Amryn ate either. Rhys chuckled from my other side.
Remind me to have family dinners more often.
Family dinners, not official court gatherings. And tonight, either they didn't know that I was here to decide if I truly wished to work with Rhys, or they didn't feel like pretending to be anything but what they were. They'd no doubt worn whatever they felt like. I had the rising feeling that I could have shown up in my nightgown and they wouldn't have cared. A unique group, indeed. And against Highburn? Who would they be? What could they do as allies or opponents? Across from me, a cocoon of silence seemed to pulse around Asriel, even as the others dug into their food. I again peered at that oval of blue stone on his gauntlet as he sipped from his glass of wine. Asriel noted the look, swift as it had been, as I had a feeling he'd been noticing and cataloging all of my movements, words, and breaths. He held up his hands, the backs to me so both jewels were on full display.
They're called siphons. They concentrate and focus our power in battle.
Only he and Cassian wore them. Rhys set down his fork and clarified for me.
The power of stronger Illyrians tends toward incinerate now, ask questions later. They have little magical gifts beyond that. The killing power.
The gift of a violent, warmongering people,
Amryn added. Asriel nodded, shadows wreathing his neck, his wrists. Cassian gave him a sharp look, face tightening, but Asriel ignored him. Rhys went on, though I knew he was aware of every glance between the spymaster and army commander.
The Illyrians bred the power to give them advantage in battle, yes. The siphons filter that raw power and allow Cassian and Asriel to transform it into something more subtle and varied, into shields and weapons, arrows and spears. Imagine the difference between hurling a bucket of paint against the wall and using a brush. The siphons allow for the magic to be nimble, precise on the battlefield, when its natural state lends it towards something far messier and unrefined, and potentially dangerous when you're fighting in tight quarters.
I wondered how much of that any of them had needed to do, if those scars on Azrael's hands had come from it. Cassian flexed his fingers, admiring the clear red stones adorning the backs of his own broad hands.
Doesn't hurt that they also look damn good,
Amryn muttered.
Illyrians.
Cassian bared his teeth in feral amusement and took a drink of his wine.
Get to know them. Try to envision how I might work with them, rely on them, if this conflict with Highburn exploded.
I scrambled for something to ask and said to Azrael, those shadows gone again,
How do you and Lord Cassian?
Cassian spewed his wine across the table, causing Moore to leap up, swearing at him as she used a napkin to mop her dress. But Cassian was howling, and Azrael had a faint, wary smile on his face as Moore waved a hand at her dress and the spots of wine appeared on Cassian's fighting, or perhaps flying, I realized, leathers. My cheeks heated. Some court protocol that I'd unknowingly broken and...
Cassian, Rhys drawled, is not a lord, though I'm sure he appreciates you thinking he is.
He surveyed his inner circle.
While we're on the subject, neither is Azrael nor Amryn. Moore, believe it or not, is the only pure-blooded, titled person in this room.
Not him?
Rhys must have seen the question on my face, because he said,
I'm half Illyrian. As good as a bastard where the thoroughbred High Fae are concerned.
So you three aren't High Fae?
I said to him and the two males. Cassian finished his laughing.
Illyrians are certainly not High Fae, and glad of it.
He hooked his black hair behind an ear, rounded, as mine had once been.
And we're not lesser fairies, though some try to call us that. We're just Illyrians. Considered expendable aerial cavalry for the Night Court at the best of times, mindless soldier grunts at the worst.
Which is most of the time,
Azrael clarified. I didn't dare ask if those shadows were a part of being Illyrian, too.
I didn't see you under the mountain, I said instead. I had to know without a doubt if they were there, if they'd seen me, if it'd impact how I interacted while working with them. Silence fell.
None of them, even Amryn, looked at Rhysand. It was Moore who said,
Because none of us were.
Rhys's face was a mask of cold.
Amarantha didn't know they existed, and when someone tried to tell her, they usually found themselves without the mind to do so.
A shudder went down my spine, not at the cold killer, but...
You truly kept this city and all these people hidden from her for 50 years?
Cassian was staring hard at his plate, as if he might burst out of his skin. Amryn said,
We will continue to keep this city and these people hidden from our enemies for a great many more.
Not an answer. Rhys hadn't expected to see them again when he'd been dragged under the mountain, yet he had kept them safe, somehow. And it killed them, the four people at this table. It killed them all that he'd done it, however he'd done it, even Amryn. Perhaps not only for the fact that Rhys had endured Amarantha while they had been here. Perhaps it was also for those left outside of the city, too. Perhaps picking one city, one place to shield, was better than nothing. Perhaps it was a comforting thing, to have a spot in Prithian that remained untouched, unsullied. Moore's voice was a bit raw as she explained to me, her golden combs glinting in the light. There is not one person in this city who is unaware of what went on outside these borders, or of the cost. I didn't want to ask what price had been demanded. The pain that laced the heavy silence told me enough. Yet if they might all live through their pain, might still laugh... I cleared my throat, straightening, and said to Azrael, who, shadows or no, seemed the safest, and therefore was probably the least so,
How did you meet?
A harmless question to feel them out, learn who they were, wasn't it? Azrael merely turned to Cassian, who was staring at Rhys with guilt and love on his face, so deep and agonized that some now splintered instinct had me almost reaching across the table to grip his hand. But Cassian seemed to process what I'd asked, and his friend's silent request that he tell the story instead, and a grin ghosted across his face.
We all hated each other at first.
Beside me, the light had winked out of Rhys's eyes. What I'd asked about Amarantha, what horrors I'd made him remember. A confession for a confession. I thought he'd done it for my sake. Maybe he had things he needed to voice, couldn't voice to these people, not without causing them more pain and guilt. Cassian went on, drawing my attention from the silent High Lord at my right.
We are bastards, you know, Az and I. The Illyrians, we love our people and our traditions, but they dwell in clans and camps deep in the mountains of the north and do not like outsiders, especially High Fae who try to tell them what to do. But they're just as obsessed with lineage and have their own princes and lords among them. Az, he said, pointing a thumb in his direction, his red siphon catching the light, was the bastard of one of the local lords. And if you think the bastard son of a lord is hated, then you can't imagine how hated the bastard is of a war camp laundress and a warrior she could or couldn't remember.
His casual shrug didn't match the vicious glint in his hazel eyes.
As his father sent him to our camp for training, once he and his charming wife realized he was a shadow singer.
Shadow singer? Yes, the title, whatever it meant, seemed to fit.
Like the Daemati, Rhys said to me, shadow singers are rare, coveted by courts and territories across the world for their stealth and predisposition to hear and feel things others can't.
Perhaps those shadows were indeed whispering to him then. Azrael's cold face yielded nothing. Cassian said,
the camp lord practically shit himself with excitement the day Az was dumped in our camp. But me, once my mother weaned me and I was able to walk, they flew me to a distant camp and chucked me into the mud to see if I would live or die.
They would have been smarter throwing you off a cliff, Moore said, snorting.
Oh, definitely,
Cassian said, that grin going razor sharp.
Especially because when I was old and strong enough to go back to the camp I'd been born in, I learned those pricks worked my mother until she died.
Again, that silence fell. Different this time. The tension and simmering anger of a unit who had endured so much, survived so much, and felt each other's pain keenly.
The Illyrians,
Rhys smoothly cut in, that light finally returning to his gaze,
are unparalleled warriors, and are rich with stories and traditions. But they are also brutal and backward, particularly in regard to how they treat their females.
Azrael's eyes had gone near vacant as he stared at the wall of windows behind me.
They're barbarians, Amryn said,
and neither Illyrian male objected. Moore nodded emphatically, even as she noted Azrael's posture and bit her lip.
They cripple their females, so they can keep them for breeding more flawless warriors.
Rhys cringed.
My mother was lowborn, he told me, and worked as a seamstress in one of their many mountain war camps. When females come of age in the camps, when they have their first bleeding, their wings are clipped. Just an incision in the right place, left to improperly heal, can cripple you forever. And my mother, she was gentle and wild and loved to fly, so she did everything in her power to keep herself from maturing. She starved herself, gathered illegal herbs, anything to halt the natural course of her body. She turned 18 and hadn't yet bled, to the mortification of her parents. But her bleeding finally arrived, and all it took was for her to be in the wrong place at the wrong time before a male scented it on her and told the camp's lord. She tried to flee, took right to the skies. But she was young, and the warriors were faster, and they dragged her back. They were about to tie her to the posts in the center of the camp, when my father winnowed in for a meeting with the camp's lord about readying for the war. He saw my mother thrashing and fighting like a wildcat, and
he swallowed.
The mating bond between them clicked into place. One look at her, and he knew what she was. He misted the guards holding her.
My brows narrowed. Missed it? Cassian let out a wicked chuckle as Rhys floated a lemon wedge that had been garnishing his chicken into the air above the table. With a flick of his finger, it turned to citrus-scented mist. Through the blood rain, Rhys went on, as I shut out the image of what it'd do to a body, what he could do. My mother looked at him, and the bond fell into place for her. My father took her back to the night court that evening and made her his bride. She loved her people and missed them, but never forgot what they had tried to do to her, what they did to the females among them. She tried for decades to get my father to ban it, but the war was coming, and he wouldn't risk isolating the Illyrians when he needed them to lead his armies and to die for him.
A real prize, your father, Moore grumbled.
At least he liked you, Rhys countered, then clarified for me. My father and mother, despite being mates, were wrong for each other. My father was cold and calculating, and could be vicious, as he had been trained to be since birth. My mother was soft and fiery and beloved by everyone she met. She hated him after a time, but never stopped being grateful that he had saved her wings, that he allowed her to fly whenever and wherever she wished. And when I was born, and could summon the Illyrian wings as I pleased, she wanted me to know her people's culture.
She wanted to keep you out of your father's claws, Moore said, swirling her wine, her shoulders loosening as Asriel at last blinked and seemed to shake off whatever memory had frozen him.
That too, Rhys added dryly. When I turned 8, my mother brought me to one of the Illyrian war camps to be trained, as all Illyrian males were trained. And like all Illyrian mothers, she shoved me toward the sparring ring on the first day and walked away without looking back.
She abandoned you? I found myself saying.
No, never,
Rhys said with a ferocity I'd heard only a few times, one of them being this afternoon.
She was staying at the camp as well. But it is considered an embarrassment for a mother to coddle her son when he goes to train.
My brows lifted, and Cassian laughed.
Backward, like he said, the warrior told me. I was scared out of my mind, Rhys admitted, not a shade of shame to be found. I'd been learning to wield my powers, but Illyrian magic was a mere fraction of it, and it's rare amongst them, usually possessed only by the most powerful purebred warriors.
Again, I looked at the slumbering siphons atop the warrior's hands.
I tried to use a siphon during those years, Rhys said, and shattered about a dozen before I realized it wasn't compatible. The stones couldn't hold it. My power flows and is honed in other ways.
So difficult, being such a powerful High Lord, Moore teased. Rhys rolled his eyes.
The Camp Lord banned me from using my magic, for all our sakes. But I had no idea how to fight when I set foot into that training ring that day. The other boys in my age group knew it too, especially one in particular, who took a look at me and beat me into a bloody mess.
You were so clean, Cassian said, shaking his head.
The pretty half-breed son of the High Lord. How fancy you were in your new training clothes. Cassian, Asriel told me with that voice like darkness given sound, resorted to getting new clothes over the years by challenging other boys to fights, with the prize being the clothes off their backs.
There was no pride in the words, not for his people's brutality. I didn't blame the Shadow Singer, though, to treat anyone that way. Cassian, however, chuckled, but I was now taking in the broad, strong shoulders, the light in his eyes. I'd never met anyone else in Prithian who had ever been hungry, desperate, not like I'd been. Cassian blinked, and the way he looked at me shifted, more assessing, more sincere. I could have sworn I saw the words in his eyes. You know what it is like. You know the mark it leaves.
I'd beaten every boy in our age group twice over already, Cassian went on. But then Rhys arrived, in his clean clothes, and he smelled different, like a true opponent. So I attacked. We both got 3 lashings apiece for the fight.
I flinched. Hitting children? They do worse, girl, Amryn cut in those camps. 3 lashings is practically an encouragement to fight again. When they do something truly bad, bones are broken. Repeatedly. Over weeks.
I said to Rhys. Your mother willingly sent you into that? Soft fire indeed.
My mother didn't want me to rely on my power, Rhysand said. She knew from the moment she conceived me that I'd be hunted my entire life. Where one strength failed, she wanted others to save me. My education was another weapon, which was why she went with me, to tutor me after lessons were done for the day. And when she took me home that first night to our new house at the edge of the camp, she made me read by the window. It was there that I saw Cassian trudging through the mud, toward the few ramshackle tents outside of the camp. I asked her where he was going, and she told me that bastards are given nothing. They find their own shelter, own food. If they survive and get picked to be in a war band, they'll be bottom-ranking forever, but receive their own tents and supplies. But until then, he'd stay in the cold. Those mountains, Asriel added, his face hard as ice, offer some of the harshest conditions you can imagine. I'd spent enough time in frozen woods to get it. After my lessons, Rhys went on, my mother cleaned my lashings, and as she did, I realized for the first time what it was to be warm and safe and cared for, and it didn't sit well.
Apparently not, Cassian said, because in the dead of night, that little prick woke me up in my piss-poor tent and told me to keep my mouth shut and come with him. And maybe the cold made me stupid, but I did.
His mother was livid, but I'll never forget the look on her beautiful face when she saw me and said, "There is a bathtub with hot running water. Get in it, or you can go back into the cold." Being a smart lad, I obeyed. When I got out, she had clean nightclothes and ordered me into bed. I'd spent my life sleeping on the ground, and when I balked, she said she understood because she had felt the same once, and that it would feel as if I was being swallowed up. But the bed was mine for as long as I wanted it.
And you were friends after that?
No, Cauldron no, Rhysand said. We hated each other, and only behaved because if one of us got into trouble or provoked the other, then neither of us ate that night. My mother started tutoring Cassian, but it wasn't until Asriel arrived a year later that we decided to be allies.
Cassian's grin grew as he reached around Amryn to clap his friend on the shoulder. Asriel sighed, the sound of the long suffering, the warmest expression I'd seen him make.
A new bastard in the camp, and an untrained shadow singer to boot. Not to mention he couldn't even fly thanks to—
Moore cut in lazily. Stay on track, Cassian. Indeed, any warmth had vanished from Asriel's face. But I quieted my own curiosity as Cassian again shrugged, not even bothering to take note of the silence that seemed to leak from the shadow singer. Moore saw, though, even if Asriel didn't bother to acknowledge her concerned stare, the hand that she kept looking at as if she'd touch, but thought better of it. Cassian went on,
Rhys and I made his life a living hell, shadow singer or no. But Rhys's mother had known Az's mother and took him in. As we grew older, and the other males around us did too, we realized everyone else hated us enough that we had better odds of survival sticking together.
Do you have any gifts? I asked him. Like them? I jerked my chin to Asriel and Rhys. A volatile temper doesn't count, Moore said as Cassian opened his mouth. He gave her that grin I realized likely meant trouble was coming, but said to me,
No, I don't. Not beyond a heaping pile of the killing power. Bastard-born nobody, through and through.
Rhys sat forward like he'd object, but Cassian forged ahead.
Even so, the other males knew that we were different, and not because we were two bastards and a half-breed. We were stronger, faster, like the Cauldron knew we'd been set apart and wanted us to find each other. Rhys's mother saw it, too. Especially as we reached the age of maturity, and all we wanted to do was fucking fight.
Males are horrible creatures, aren't they? Amryn said. Repulsive, Moore said, clicking her tongue. Some surviving small part of my heart wanted to laugh at that. Cassian shrugged.
Rhys's power grew every day, and everyone, even the camp lords, knew he could mist everyone if he felt like it. And the two of us, we weren't far behind.
He tapped his crimson siphon with a finger. A bastard Illyrian had never received one of these, ever. For Az and me to both be appointed them, albeit begrudgingly, had every warrior in every camp across those mountains sizing us up. Only pure-blood pricks get siphons, born and bred for the killing power. It still keeps them up at night, puzzling over where the hell we got it from. Then the war came. Azrael took over. Just the way he said the words made me sit up, listen. And Rhys's father visited our camp to see how his son had fared after 20 years. My father, Rhys said, swirling his wine once, twice, saw that his son had not only started to rival him for power, but had allied himself with perhaps the two deadliest Illyrians in history. He got it into his head that if we were given a legion in the war, we might very well turn it against him when we returned. Cassian snickered. So the prick separated us. He gave Rhys command of a legion of Illyrians who hated him for being a half-breed, and threw me into a different legion to be a common foot soldier, even when my power outranked any of the war leaders. As he kept for himself as his personal shadow singer, mostly for spying and his dirty work. We only saw each other on battlefields for the 7 years the war raged. They'd send around casualty lists among the Illyrians, and I read each one, wondering if I'd see their names on it. But then Rhys was captured. That is a story for another time, Rhys said, sharply enough that Cassian lifted his brows, but nodded. Rhys's violet eyes met mine, and I wondered if it was true starlight that flickered so intensely in them as he spoke. Once I became High Lord, I appointed these four to my inner circle, and told the rest of my father's old court that if they had a problem with my friends, they could leave. They all did. Turns out, having a half-breed High Lord was made worse by his appointment of two females and two Illyrian bastards. As bad as humans, in some ways. What happened to them, then? Rhys shrugged, those great wings shifting with the movement. The nobility of the Night Court fall into one of three categories. Those who hated me enough that when Amarantha took over, they joined her court and later found themselves dead. Those who hated me enough to try to overthrow me and faced the consequences. And those who hated me, but not enough to be stupid and have since tolerated a half-breed's rule, especially when it so rarely interferes with their miserable lives. Are they the ones who live beneath the mountain? A nod. In the Hewn City, yes. I gave it to them for not being fools. They're happy to stay there, rarely leaving, ruling themselves and being as wicked as they please for all eternity. That was the court he must have shown Amarantha when she first arrived, and its wickedness must have pleased her enough that she modeled her own after it. The Court of Nightmares, Moore said, sucking on a tooth. And what is this court? I asked, gesturing to them. The most important question. It was Cassian, eyes clear and bright as his siphon, who said, The Court of Dreams. The Court of Dreams. The dreams of a half-breed High Lord, two bastard warriors, and the two females. And you? I said to Moore and Amryn. Amryn merely said, Rhys offered to make me his second. No one had ever asked me before, so I said yes, to see what it might be like. I found I enjoyed it. Moore leaned back in her seat, Azrael now watching every movement she made with subtle, relentless focus. I was a dreamer born into the Court of Nightmares, Moore said. She twirled a curl around a finger, and I wondered if her story might be the worst of them all, as she said simply, So I got out.
What's your story, then?
Cassian said to me with a jerk of his chin. I'd assumed Rhys and had told them everything. Rhys merely shrugged at me, so I straightened. I was born to a wealthy merchant family, with two older sisters and parents who only cared about their money and social standing. My mother died when I was 8. My father lost his fortune 3 years later. He sold everything to pay off his debts, moved us into a hovel, and didn't bother to find work while he let us slowly starve for years. I was 14 when the last of the money ran out, along with the food. He wouldn't work, couldn't, because the debtors came and shattered his leg in front of us. So I went into the forest and taught myself to hunt.
and I kept us all alive, if not near starvation at times, for 5 years, until everything happened. They fell quiet again, Asriel's gaze now considering. He hadn't told his story. Did it ever come up, or did they never discuss those burns on his hands? And what did the shadows whisper to him? Did they speak in a language at all? But Cassian said, "You taught yourself to hunt. What about to fight?" I shook my head. Cassian braced his arms on the table. "Lucky for you, you've just found yourself a teacher." I opened my mouth, protesting, but Rhysand's mother had given him an arsenal of weapons to use if the other failed. What did I have in my own, beyond a good shot with a bow and brute stubbornness? And if I had this new power, these other powers, I would not be weak again. I would not be dependent on anyone else. I would never have to endure the touch of the Ador as it dragged me, because I was too helpless to know where and how to hit. Never again. But what Ianthe and Tamlin had said, "You don't think it sends a bad message if people see me learning to fight, using weapons?" The moment the words were out, I realized the stupidity of them, the stupidity of what had been shoved down my throat these past few months. Silence. Then Moore said, with a soft venom that made me understand the High Lord's Third had received training of her own in that Court of Nightmares, "Let me tell you two things, as someone who has perhaps been in your shoes before." Again, that shared bond of anger, of pain throbbed between them all, save for Amryn, who was giving me a look dripping with distaste. "One," Moore said, "you have left the Spring Court." I tried not to let the full weight of those words sink in. "If that does not send a message, for good or bad, then your training will not either." "Two," she continued, laying her palm flat on the table, "I once lived in a place where the opinion of others mattered. It suffocated me, nearly broke me. So you'll understand me, Feyre, when I say that I know what you feel, and I know what they tried to do to you, and that with enough courage, you can say to hell with a reputation." Her voice gentled, and the tension between them all faded with it. "You do what you love, what you need." Moore would not tell me what to wear or not wear. She would not allow me to step aside while she spoke for me. She would not do any of the things that I had so willingly, desperately allowed Ianthe to do. I had never had a female friend before. Ianthe, she had not been one. Not in the way that mattered, I realized. And Nesta and Elaine, in those few weeks I'd been at home before Amarantha, had started to fill that role, but looking at Moore, I couldn't explain it, couldn't understand it, but I felt it, like I could indeed go to dinner with her, talk to her. Not that I had much of anything to offer her in return, but what she'd said, what they'd all said. Yes, Rhys had been wise to bring me here, to let me decide if I could handle them, the teasing and intensity and power, if I wanted to be a part of a group who would likely push me and overwhelm me and maybe frighten me. But if they were willing to stand against Highburn after already fighting them 500 years ago? I met Cassian's gaze, and though his eyes danced, there was nothing amused in them. "I'll think about it." Through the bond in my hand, I could have sworn I felt a glimmer of pleased surprise. I checked my mental shields, but they were intact, and Rhysand's calm face revealed no hint of its origin. So I said clearly, steadily to him, "I accept your offer to work with you, to earn my keep, and help with Highburn in whatever way I can." "Good," Rhys merely replied, even as the others raised their brows. Yes, they'd obviously not been told this was an interview of sorts. "Because we start tomorrow." "Where and what?" I sputtered. Rhys interlaced his fingers and rested them on the table, and I realized there was another point to this dinner beyond my decision, as he announced to all of us,
"Because the King of Highburn is indeed about to launch a war, and he wants to resurrect Jurian to do it."
Jurian, the ancient warrior whose soul Amarantha had imprisoned within that hideous ring as punishment for killing her sister, the ring that contained his eye.
"Bullshit," Cassian spat. "There's no way to do that."
Amryn had gone still, and it was she whom Asriel was observing, marking.
Amarantha was just the beginning, Rhys had once told me.
Had he known this even then? Had those months under the mountain merely been a prelude to whatever hell was about to be unleashed? Resurrecting the dead. What sort of unholy power? Moore groaned.
Why would the king want to resurrect Jurian? He was so odious. All he liked to do was talk about himself.
The age of these people hit me like a brick, despite all they'd told me minutes earlier. The war. They had all fought in the war 500 years ago.
That's what I want to find out,
Rhysand said,
and how the king plans to do it.
Amryn said at last.
Word will have reached him about Feyre's making. He knows it's possible for the dead to be remade.
I shifted in my seat. I'd expected brute armies, pure bloodshed, but this?
All 7 High Lords would have to agree to that, Moore countered. There's not a chance it happens. He'll take another route.
Her eyes narrowed to slits as she faced Rhys.
All the slaughtering, the massacres at temples. You think it's tied to this?
I know it's tied to this. I didn't want to tell you until I knew for certain. But Asriel confirmed that they'd raided the memorial in Sangreva 3 days ago. They're looking for something, or found it.
Asriel nodded in confirmation, even as Moore cast a surprised look in his direction. Asriel gave her an apologetic shrug back. I breathed.
That's why the ring and the finger bone vanished after Amarantha died. For this, but who?
My mouth went dry.
They never caught the Ador, did they?
Rhys said too quietly.
No. No, they didn't.
The food in my stomach turned leaden. He said to Amryn,
how does one take an eye and a finger bone and make it into a man again? And how do we stop it?
Amryn frowned at her untouched wine.
You already know how to find the answer. Go to the prison. Talk to the bone carver.
Shit.
Moore and Cassian both said. Rhys said calmly,
perhaps you would be more effective, Amryn.
I was grateful for the table separating us as Amryn hissed,
I will not set foot in the prison, Rhysand, and you know it. So go yourself, or send one of these dogs to do it for you.
Cassian grinned, showing his white, straight teeth, perfect for biting. Amryn snapped hers once in return. Asriel just shook his head.
I'll go. The prison sentries know me, what I am.
I wondered if the Shadow Singer was usually the first to throw himself into danger. Moore's fingers stilled on the stem of her wine glass, her eyes narrowing on Amryn. The jewels, the red gown, all perhaps a way to downplay whatever dark power roiled in her veins.
If anyone's going to the prison,
Rhys said before Moore opened her mouth,
it's me and Feyre.
What? Moore demanded, palms now flat on the table.
He won't talk to Rhys, Amryn said to the others, or to Asriel, or to any of us. We've got nothing to offer him, but an immortal with a mortal soul.
She stared at my chest, as if she could see the heart pounding beneath, and I contemplated yet again what she ate.
The bone carver might be willing indeed to talk to her.
They stared at me, as if waiting for me to beg not to go, to curl up and cower. Their quick, brutal interview to see if they wanted to work with me, I supposed. But the bone carver, the Naga, the Ator, the Suriel, the Bogey, the Midengard Worm. Maybe they'd broken whatever part of me truly feared. Or maybe fear was only something I now felt in my dreams.
Your choice, Feyre,
Rhys said casually. To shrink and mourn, or face some unknown horror. The choice was easy. How bad can it be? Was my response.
Bad,
Cassian said. None of them bothered to contradict him. Chapter 17. Jurian. The name clanged through me, even after we finished dinner, even after Moore and Cassian and Asriel and Amryn had stopped debating and snarling about who would do what and be where, while Rhys and I went to the prison, whatever that was, tomorrow. Rhys flew me back over the city, plunging into the lights and darkness. I quickly found I much preferred ascending and couldn't bring myself to watch for too long without feeling my dinner rise up. Not fear, just some reaction of my body. We flew in silence, the whistling winter wind the only sound, despite his cocoon of warmth blocking it from freezing me entirely. Only when the music of the streets welcomed us did I peer into his face, his features unreadable as he focused on flying. Tonight, I felt you again, through the bond. Did I get past your shields? No, he said, scanning the cobblestone streets below. This bond is a living thing, an open channel between us, shaped by my powers, shaped by what you needed when we made the bargain. I needed not to be dead when I agreed. You needed not to be alone. Our eyes met. It was too dark to read whatever was in his gaze. I was the one who looked away first. I'm still learning how and why we can sometimes feel things the other doesn't want known, he admitted, so I don't have an explanation for what you felt tonight. You needed not to be alone. But what about him? 50 years he'd been separated from his friends, his family. I said, you let Amarantha and the entire world think you rule and delight in a court of nightmares. It's all a front, to keep what matters most safe. The city lights gilded his face. I love my people and my family. Do not think I wouldn't become a monster to keep them protected. You already did that under the mountain. The words were out before I could stop them. The wind rustled his hair. And I suspect I'll have to do it again soon enough. What was the cost, I dared ask, of keeping this place secret and free? He shot straight down, wings beating to keep us smooth as we landed on the roof of the townhouse. I made to step away, but he gripped my chin. You know the cost already. Amarantha's whore. He nodded, and I think I might have said the two vile words aloud. When she tricked me out of my powers and left the scraps, it was still more than the others, and I decided to use it to tap into the mind of every Night Court citizen she captured, and anyone who might know the truth. I made a web between all of them, actively controlling their minds every second of every day, every decade, to forget about Valaris, to forget about Mor and Amran and Cassian and Azriel. Amarantha wanted to know who was close to me, who to kill and torture. But my true court was here, ruling this city and the others, and I used the remainder of my power to shield them all from sight and sound. I had only enough for one city, one place. I chose the one that had been hidden from history already. I chose, and now must live with the consequences of knowing there were more left outside who suffered. But for those here, anyone flying or traveling near Valaris would see nothing but barren rock, and if they tried to walk through it, they'd find themselves suddenly deciding otherwise. Sea travel and merchant trading were halted. Sailors became farmers, working the earth around Valaris instead. And because my powers were focused on shielding them all, Feyre, I had very little to use against Amarantha. So I decided that to keep her from asking questions about the people who mattered, I would be her whore.
He'd done all of that, had done such horrible things, done everything for his people, his friends, and the only piece of him that he'd hidden and managed to keep her from tainting, destroying, even if it meant 50 years trapped in a cage of rock. Those wings now flared wide. How many knew about those wings outside of Valaris or the Illyrian war camps? Or had he wiped all memory of them from Prithian long before Amarantha? Rhys released my chin, but as he lowered his hand, I gripped his wrist, feeling the solid strength. It's a shame, I said, the words nearly gobbled up by the sound of the city music, that others in Prithian don't know. A shame that you let them think the worst. He took a step back, his wings beating the air like mighty drums. As long as the people who matter most know the truth, I don't care about the rest. Get some sleep. Then he shot into the sky and was swallowed by the darkness between the stars. I tumbled into a sleep so heavy my nightmares were an undertow that dragged me down, down, down until I couldn't escape them. I lay naked and prone on a familiar red marble floor, while Amarantha slid a knife along my bare ribs, the steel scraping softly against my skin.
"Lying, traitorous human," she purred, "with your filthy, lying heart."
The knife scratched, a cool caress. I struggled to get up, but my body wouldn't work. She pressed a kiss to the hollow of my throat.
"You're as much a monster as me."
She curved the knife over my breast, angling it toward my peaked nipple, as if she could see the heart beating beneath. I started sobbing.
"Don't waste your tears."
Someone far away was roaring my name, begging for me.
"I'm going to make eternity a hell for you," she promised,
the tip of the dagger piercing the sensitive flesh beneath my breast, her lips hovering a breath above mine as she pushed. Hands. There were hands on my shoulders, shaking me, squeezing me. I thrashed against them, screaming, screaming.
"Feyre!"
The voice was at once the night and the dawn and the stars and the earth, and every inch of my body calmed at the primal dominance in it.
"Open your eyes,"
the voice ordered. I did. My throat was raw, my mouth full of ash, my face soaked and sticky, and Rhysand. Rhysand was hovering above me, his eyes wide.
"It was a dream,"
he said, his breathing as hard as mine. The moonlight trickling through the windows illuminated the dark lines of swirling tattoos down his arm, his shoulders, across his sculpted chest, like the ones I bore on my arm. He scanned my face.
"A dream,"
he said again. Valaris. I was in Valaris, at his house, and I had my dream. The sheets, the blankets were ripped, shredded, but not with a knife, and that ashy, smoky taste coating my mouth. My hand was unnervingly steady as I lifted it to find my fingers ending in simmering embers, living claws of flame that had sliced through my bed linens like they were cauterizing wounds. I shoved him off with a hard shoulder, falling out of bed and slamming into a small chest before I hurtled into the bathing room, fell to my knees before the toilet, and was sick to my stomach. Again, again. My fingertips hissed against the cool porcelain. Large, warm hands pulled my hair back a moment later.
"Breathe," Rhys said. "Imagine them winking out like candles, one by one."
I heaved into the toilet again, shuddering as light and heat crested and rushed out of me, and savored the empty, cool dark that pooled in their wake.
"Well, that's one way to do it," he said.
When I dared to look at my hands, braced on the bowl, the embers had been extinguished. Even that power in my veins, along my bones, slumbered once more.
"I have this dream,"
Rhys said as I retched again, holding my hair,
"where it's not me stuck under her, but Cassian or Azrael, and she's pinned their wings to the bed with spikes, and there's nothing I can do to stop it. She's commanded me to watch, and I have no choice but to see how I failed them."
I clung to the toilet, spitting once, and reached up to flush. I watched the water swirl away entirely before I twisted my head to look at him. His fingers were gentle, but firm where he'd fisted them in my hair.
"You never failed them," I rasped.
"I did horrible things to ensure that."
Those violet eyes near glowed in the dim light.
"So did I."
My sweat clung like blood, the blood of those two fairies. I pivoted, barely turning in time. His other hand stroked long, soothing lines down the curve of my back, as over and over I yielded my dinner. When the latest wave had ebbed, I breathed.
"The flames?"
"Autumn Court."
I couldn't muster a response. At some point, I leaned against the coolness of the nearby bathtub and closed my eyes. When I awoke, sun streamed through the windows, and I was in my bed, tucked in tightly to the fresh, clean sheets. I stared up at the sharp, grassy slope of the small mountain, shivering at the veils of mist that wafted past. Behind us, the land swept away to brutal cliffs and a violent pewter sea. Ahead, nothing but a wide, flat-topped mountain of gray stone and moss. Rhys stood at my side, a double-edged sword sheathed down his spine, knives strapped to his legs, clothed in what I could only assume were Illyrian fighting leathers, based on what Cassian and Asriel had worn the night before. The dark pants were tight, the scale-like plates of leather worn and scarred, and sculpted to legs I hadn't noticed were quite that muscled. His close-fitting jacket had been built around the wings that were now fully out, bits of dark, scratched armor added at the shoulders and forearms. If his attire hadn't told me enough about what we might be facing today, if my own similar attire hadn't told me enough, all I needed was to take one look at the rock before us and know it wouldn't be pleasant. I'd been so distracted in the study an hour ago by what Rhys had been writing, as he drafted a careful request to visit the summer court, that I hadn't thought to ask what to expect here. Not that Rhys had really bothered explaining why he wanted to visit the summer court, beyond improving diplomatic relations. "Where are we?" I said, our first words since winnowing in a moment ago. Valaris had been brisk, sunny. This place, wherever it was freezing, deserted, barren. Only rock and grass and mist and sea.
"On an island in the heart of the Western Isles," Rhysand said, staring up at the mammoth mountain. "And that," he said, pointing to it, "is the prison."
There was nothing, no one around.
"I don't see anything."
"The rock is the prison, and inside it are the foulest, most dangerous creatures and criminals you can imagine."
"Go inside. Inside the stone. Under another mountain."
"This place," he said, "was made before High Lords existed, before Prithian was Prithian. Some of the inmates remember those days. Remember a time when it was Moore's family, not mine, that ruled the North."
"Why won't Amryn go in here?"
"Because she was once a prisoner."
"Not in that body, I take it."
A cruel smile. "No, not at all."
I shivered.
"The hike will get your blood warming," Rhys said. "Since we can't winnow inside or fly to the entrance, the wards demand that visitors walk in. The long way."
I didn't move.
The word lodged in my throat. "Go under another mountain." "It helps the panic," he said quietly, "to remind myself that I got out, that we all got out."
"Barely." I tried to breathe. I couldn't.
"We got out, and it might happen again if we don't go inside."
The chill mist bit at my face, and I did, to take a step toward it. My body refused to obey. I tried to take a step again. I tried for Elaine and Nesta and the human world that might be wrecked, but I couldn't. "Please," I whispered. I didn't care if it meant that I'd failed my first day of work. Rhysand, as promised, didn't ask any questions as he gripped my hand and brought us back to the winter sun and rich colors of Valaris. I didn't get out of bed for the rest of the day.
Chapter 18. Amryn was standing at the foot of my bed. I jolted back, slamming into the headboard, blinded by the morning light blazing in, fumbling for a weapon, anything to use.
"No wonder you're so thin, if you vomit your guts every night," she sniffed, her lip curling. "You reek of it."
The bedroom door was shut. Rhys had said no one entered without his permission, but she chucked something onto the bed. A little gold amulet of pearl and cloudy blue stone.
"This got me out of the prison. Wear it in, and they can never keep you."
I didn't touch the amulet.
"Allow me to make one thing clear," Amryn said,
bracing both hands on the carved wooden footboard.
"I do not give that amulet lightly, but you may borrow it while you do what needs to be done and return it to me when you are finished. If you keep it, I will find you, and the results won't be pleasant. But it is yours to use in the prison."
By the time my fingers brushed the cool metal and stone, she'd walked out the door. Rhys hadn't been wrong about the fire drake comparison. Rhys kept frowning at the amulet as we hiked the slope of the prison, so steep that at times we had to crawl on our hands and knees.
Higher and higher we climbed, and I drank from the countless little streams that gurgled through the bumps and hollows in the moss and grass slopes. All around, the mist drifted by, whipped by the wind, whose hollow moaning drowned out our crunching footsteps. When I caught Reese looking at the necklace for the 10th time, I said, "What?"
"She gave you that."
Not a question. "It must be serious, then," I said, the risk with,
"Don't say anything you don't want others hearing."
He pointed to the stone beneath us.
"The inmates have nothing better to do than listen through the earth and rock for gossip. They'll sell any bit of information for food, sex, maybe a breath of air."
I could do this. I could master this fear. Amran had gotten out and stayed out, and the amulet, it'd keep me free too. "I'm sorry," I said, "about yesterday." I'd stayed in bed for hours, unable to move or think. Reese held out a hand to help me climb a particularly steep rock, easily hauling me up to where he perched at its top. It had been so long, too long since I'd been outdoors, using my body, relying on it. My breathing was ragged, even with my new immortality.
"You've got nothing to be sorry for," he said. "You're here now,
but enough of a coward that I never would have gone without that amulet." He added with a wink,
"I won't dock your pay."
I was too winded to even scowl. We climbed until the upper face of the mountain became a wall before us, nothing but grassy slopes sweeping behind, far below, to where they flowed to the restless gray sea. Reese drew the sword from his back in a swift movement.
"Don't look so surprised," he said.
"I've never seen you with a weapon, aside from the dagger he'd grabbed to slit Amarantha's throat at the end, to spare me from agony."
"Cassian would laugh himself hoarse hearing that, and then make me go into the sparring ring with him."
"Can he beat you?"
"Hand-to-hand combat? Yes. He'd have to earn it for a change, but he'd win."
No arrogance, no pride.
"Cassian is the best warrior I've encountered in any court, any land. He leads my armies because of it."
I didn't doubt his claim. And the other Illyrian? "Azrael. His hands. The scars, I mean," I said. "Where did they come from?" Reese was quiet a moment. Then he said too softly,
"His father had two legitimate sons, both older than Azrael, both cruel and spoiled. They learned it from their mother, the Lord's wife. For the 11 years that Azrael lived in his father's keep, she saw to it he was kept in a cell with no window, no light. They let him out for an hour every day, let him see his mother for an hour once a week. He wasn't permitted to train, or fly, or any of the things his Illyrian instincts roared at him to do. When he was 8, his brothers decided it'd be fun to see what happened when you mixed an Illyrian's quick healing gifts with oil and fire. The warriors heard Azrael screaming, but not quick enough to save his hands."
Nausea swamped me, but that still left him with 3 more years living with them. What other horrors had he endured before he was sent to that mountain camp? Were his brothers punished? Reese's face was as unfeeling as the rock and wind and sea around us, as he said with lethal quiet,
"Eventually."
There was enough rawness in the words that I instead asked, "And more, what does she do for you?"
"Mor is who I'll call in when the armies fail, and Cassian and Azrael are both dead."
My blood chilled. "So she's supposed to wait until then?"
"No. As my third, Mor is my court overseer. She looks after the dynamics between the Court of Nightmares and the Court of Dreams, and runs both Valaris and the Hewn City. I suppose in the mortal realm she might be considered a queen."
"And Amran?"
"Her duties as my second make her my political advisor, walking library, and doer of my dirty work. I appointed her upon gaining my throne, but she was my ally, maybe my friend, long before that."
"I mean, in that war, where your armies fail and Cassian and Azrael are dead, and even Mor is gone." Each word was like ice on my tongue. Reese paused his reach for the bald rock face before us.
"If that day comes, I'll find a way to break the spell on Amran and unleash her on the world, and ask her to end me first."
By the mother. What is she?
After our chat this morning, perhaps it was stupid to ask. Something else. Something worse than us. And if she ever finds a way to shed her prison of flesh and bone, cauldrons save us all. I shivered again and stared up at the sheer stone wall. I can't climb bare rock like that.
You don't need to,
Rhys said, laying a hand flat on the stone. Like a mirage, it vanished in a ripple of light. Pale carved gates stood in its place, so high their tops were lost to the mist. Gates of bone. The bone gate swung open silently, revealing a cavern of black so inky I had never seen its like, even under the mountain. I gripped the amulet at my throat, the metal warm under my palm. Amryn got out. I would walk out, too. Rhys put a warm hand on my back and guided me inside, three balls of moonlight bobbing before us.
No, 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 no.
Breathe,
he said in my ear. One breath.
Where are the guards?
I managed to get out past the tightness in my lungs.
They dwell within the rock of the mountain,
he murmured, his hand finding mine and wrapping around it as he tugged me into the immortal gloom.
They only emerge at feeding time, or to deal with restless prisoners. They are nothing but shadows of thought and an ancient spell.
With the small floating lights ahead, I tried not to look too long at the gray walls, especially when they were so rough-hewn that the jagged bits could have been a nose, or a craggy brow, or a set of sneering lips. The dry ground was clear of anything but pebbles, and there was silence. Utter silence as we rounded a bend, and the last of the light from the misty world faded into inky black. I focused on my breathing. I couldn't be trapped here. I couldn't be locked in this horrible, dead place. The path plunged deep into the belly of the mountain, and I clutched Rhys's fingers to keep from losing my footing. He still had his sword gripped in his other hand.
Do all the High Lords have access?
My words were so soft they were devoured by the dark. Even that thrumming power in my veins had vanished, burrowing somewhere in my bones.
No, the prison is law unto itself. The island may be even an eighth court, but it falls under my jurisdiction, and my blood is keyed to the gates.
Could you free the inmates?
No. Once the sentence is given and a prisoner passes those gates, they belong to the prison. It will never let them out. I take sentencing people here very, very seriously.
Have you ever?
Yes, and now is not the time to speak of it.
He squeezed my hand in emphasis. We wound down through the gloom. There were no doors, no lights, no sounds, not even a trickle of water. But I could feel them. I could feel them sleeping, pacing, running hands and claws over the other side of the walls. They were ancient and cruel in a way I had never known, not even with Amarantha. They were infinite and patient and had learned the language of darkness, of stone.
How long?
I breathed.
How long was she in here?
I didn't dare say her name.
Azrael looked once, into archives in our oldest temples and libraries. All he found was a vague mention that she went in before Prithian was split into the courts, and emerged once they had been established. Her imprisonment predates our written word.